call the Deputy Director General, 500 of them at the DSS. Nice to see, I think the rain has brought one of our old friends back to Cape Town, acting DG. DDG, Governor. So welcome, DDG Governor. I think you need a special word of welcome. And then all chief directors, directors, assistant directors, deputy directors, special advisors, chief of staff, who else is there? Who did you miss? Everyone present, very warm welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. Honourable members, apologies for Honourable Matlopa, Australian Hospital in Durban. Honourable Sotole, Honourable Mateis, Honourable Ayer.
Thank you, Chair. Just Honourable Pig just called a few minutes ago and said he's running a little bit late, he's been delayed, he'll join us shortly.
Thank you, Honourable Ayer. Honourable Bhutani.
Thank you, Chair. Morning. Okay, I may be here, but I will leave within the hour. I'm participating in another session with the students of Stellenbosch.
Well, I think that election has been taken over. That election has been won, the student council election. So I'm not sure whether the UDM can do anything. I think Gasso has taken over. What the DA has taken. No, understandable on all the time. So you're going to de-campaign against the Gasso guy. No problem. Our members, I think, will join us a little bit as we move along. Once again, we are back here with the department. As promised, we have asked the department to come back and they briefed us on what action plans they've got in terms of the findings of the Auditor General. So today, the Acting Director General has kept his word, DG Butela, and he said, no, don't worry, Chair, I'll brought my team. Even if we have to walk down to Cape Town, we will be there. Thank you very much for keeping the work easy. The team is here. The team has managed to bring the government along. So you have done a sterling job in getting your team here. So without any further waste of time, let me hand over to Deputy Minister, is there any introductory remarks you want to do?
No, I think that's good enough. Other than to say that the Minister was only aware that Japan had transport problems in South Africa. I gather he won't be able to. So apologies.
I hope he doesn't fly mango. Okay, that's what apologies accepted, because the Minister has promised that he would be here, so. But apologies accepted. Deputy Minister, but he's put you here, so that's fine. Acting Director General, over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues, we are back here. We want to take a presentation briefly, and thereafter we'll proceed with questions and answers. The approach that we're going to take is that we have made a brief presentation which we're not going to go through weight by weight. We're going to run over it with respect to the overall audit action plan. And then there will be also an overall audit action plan on the TMTB. And then we'll focus also on the specific action plan. But we have also provided responses to questions that were asked before. we may want to elaborate more if there are additional questions based on what you have asked before. If they are not stipulated, those questions and answers, I will ask one of my colleagues to provide them to our honorable members, and then we can engage on them, but we are going to talk on them. I'll hand over to my colleague, MTS, who's going to run over what we have actually prepared in terms of the audit action plan. There will be a detailed audit action plan that will actually cover the entire audit questions as presented in the management letter from the AG. But I think now we thought it's wise that we share with the committee what we are already doing. Mr. MTO.
Thank you, NDG, and good morning, the chairperson and members of the committee. The chairperson, through you, as the DG has mentioned, that we have three sections in the presentation, to which I'll take you and give you an overview. It's DPW action plan, the PMT overall action plan, and finally, program-specific action plans where we deal more with performance issues and the audit findings with respect to performance information. If I just give you a quick overview, we obviously in 2013 had a qualified audit, and then we improved from 2014, and we've maintained it in DPW up to 2017. With respect to the audit action plan, there are a number of issues raised by the AG, and they fall into a number of themes. The first one being financial management, and in this particular area, the AG raised concerns with respect to payments made after 30 days from the receipt of the invoice. Of course, we've identified the root causes and implemented certain action plans. And the current status is that between April and July, 92% of those invoices were paid within 30 days to show our level of improvement. We also have assignment on the key management personnel disclosure note is not correctly calculated, and this is also attended to for the root causes identified. The third finding is the amount disclosed for claims against the department differs from the confirmation from the Office of the State Attorney, and it is also dealt with. With respect to governance, risk, and compliance, there were certain deficiencies noted in the manner in which the annual performance plan was crafted, and there were inconsistencies identified between the annual performance plan and the annual report, and that was dealt with. And we're having quarterly reviews to ensure that we have consistency in future. There was also a finding with respect to predetermined objectives, where not all targets on the medium-term strategic framework was in fact included in the APP. This talks to the EPWP number of work opportunities reported through the EPWP reporting system. And in 2018, or at least 2017-18, we have now included that particular indicator on the face of the annual performance plan. Also with respect to the performance information, there was a finding that predetermined objectives targets were not consistent when compared with planned targets, and this has also been addressed and is also being monitored on a quarterly basis. Moving on to corporate services, the finding was that procurement and contract management SMS members did not declare interest, and there are a number of interventions that have been set in place in the department to ensure that proper disclosure is made in this regard. A number of communiques were sent out in the department as reminders, and to create awareness in the department. Disclosures were submitted to the Public Service Commission, in fact, by the 31st of May. And the current e-disclosure portal is being amended to allow the department to do checks against the CIPC, the DEIS record, as well as the e-NATIS, the transportation system. So we've included a number of interventions there to cure that particular finding. Same with corporate services. With respect to procurement and contract management, no approval obtained for a remunerative work, that is so-called ROPS, a remunerative work outside the public service. And what we've done is we've taken action to issue a circular in this regard, cases of non-disclosure are being forwarded for investigation and disciplinary action. And this matter is now very much in hand. And we are also developing as a department an integrity management framework and developing the post of an ethics officer as a full-time function to monitor this particular area with respect to members of the public service and in the employee of the department doing work outside the public service. Further, with respect to corporate services, HR management payroll certificates were not certified and returned timely, that is a straightforward issue of compliance. It is also being dealt with. And investigations are completed with a number of printing stations in Bloemfontein, Victoria, Pietermaritzburg, Bishu, and Cape Town. And the possibility of management and the confirmation of payroll being in line with treasury is being transferred to the heads of human resources in the regions where non-compliance has been identified for further investigation. Same with corporate services, lead forms not captured timelessly in this area as well. Straightforward non-compliance is being dealt with. In the current status is an improvement in this area. Management vacancy rate, root causes were identified and the actions taken was the implementation of the structure for PNTE and DPW has taken place for matching and placing and allocation of compensation budget to fill vacant posts has taken place and activation on personnel of funded vacant positions for immediate sanitizing and filling, and this matter is in hand. With respect to performance agreement deviation, what we have is a number of interventions in place to deal with performance management issues. And then also moving on to the further finding under corporate services that management did not implement any good security management controls. This is also being dealt with. There was finalization of a firewall installation at two remaining sites. And the policy in this area has been updated and the matter is in hand. Corporate services, also IT service continuity and ICT disaster recovery plan has been documented. However, the plan has not been approved and this has been dealt with, is now waiting sign off. Moving to the extended public works program and adopting the performance information, the reported achievement was not supported by adequate evidence, and this was dealt with. The finding dealt with the fact that the department did not have adequate filing and proper report management systems to support the reported performance information. And what has transpired is that the EPWP program instituted a number of interventions, including the development of business processes and templates in a particular area for completion onto the EPWP reporting system, and this is also enhanced. Transfers and subsidies, there was a finding with respect to transfers and subsidies in EPWP that grants were not effectively monitored due to a lack of appropriate monitoring on particular EPWP projects. This has been dealt with, and the current changes and engagement that is there, together with internal audits for a number of site visits, 102 in total, and part of the site visits will also include verification of documents to avoid this particular finding in the future. Staying on EPWP transfers and subsidies, the EPWP expenditure report submitted by public bodies does not indicate what the funds were used for. Now, the action taken is that EPWP, the grant template, has been modified to show the breakdown of expenditure on the different items. And current status is consultations with EPW Finance Unit are underway to update this particular template to address the findings. Predetermined objectives, also errors on beneficiaries report. Beneficiaries reported on the EPWP systems for quarter 4 and in March 2017. The action taken was that all existing validation procedures external to the reporting system were revised to detect quality issues more effectively, and the current status is that all actions have been implemented and instructions sent out in this particular regard. Same with EPWP. EPWP projects were not reported on the reporting system. The action taken was that technical support was to be provided to public bodies to ensure that there's proper reporting, as well as monthly meetings on the verification of projects, as well as conducting of head of site visits by EPWP. And this met is in hand. The current status is of 684 planned provincial projects for social environment, environment and council sectors for 2017-18, the current financial year. 559 have already been captured on the reporting system. With respect to EPWP as well, beneficiary is not reported on the EPWP fourth quarter. The action taken is that site visits are taking place with a view to verification to ensure EPWP adheres. And 567 projects visited already in the first quarter of 2017-18. Expanded public works as well. Beneficiaries were duplicated on the reporting system. The action taken is that the project's financial years reported on the system will always have different years due to different spheres of government. Projects can cross
financial year is the response, and the feeling within EPWP that there is no further action required here. Also staying on EPWP, the finding of non-submission of ID copies, attendance registers and proof of payment. The action has been the branch is monitoring public bodies to ensure that files for the projects are properly maintained, and 700 site visits is to be done on a sample basis to ensure compliance with the court keeping. And currently, 102 site visits were conducted to verify particular project information, and 67 projects were visited by the Environmental and Culture and Social Sectors within the first quarter of 2017. Chairperson and members of the committee, EPWP beneficiary list on the EPWP reporting system was a list not employed on the project. Now, engagements will be held with the public bodies to ensure that participants are loaded onto the system, and 700 site visits also to be made here, together with convening of monthly project meetings to verify projects reported on the system versus the planned project template. And there will be follow-up or alignment of the sectors. Moving on to Section B. Section B would be PMTD. Here we had a bit of a decline in our performance. Moving from a disclaimer in 2012, we improved our performance to qualify for three straight years, 2014, 15, and 16, before we declined into an adverse opinion in the current year, 2016-17. And Chairperson, I'm sure my colleague is going to be speaking to this on business and PR, that with respect to the first outcome, the previous financial period, we show the cost of the qualified opinion in 2012-13. The previous financial period, 2014 to 2016, when the main causes were, and give some kind of background there. And then move to the current financial year, 2016-17, I think this was explained less last week. The week before, it said Directive 2 was no longer available and full compliance with the rest was then required. And the other outcome is resulted in an adverse opinion due to qualification in the following areas: property, plant and equipment, valuation, and asset under construction, accrual, provisions, and receivables in particular with respect to unscheduled maintenance. Now, this is just a picture of the impact, audit impact of the Directive. You can see in 2017, Directive 2 expired, and with respect to management, measurement of immovable assets on the asset register, we did not pass muster in that particular regard, and this resulted in an adverse opinion given that property, plant and equipment is so significant in relation to the overall financial position of the PMCE. The next slide, we also talked to the audit opinion, and talk to the same thing and say that property, plant and equipment is pervasive and it is so large, so significant that the AG then issued an adverse opinion. Chairperson, just to put it in context of where we are, the adverse opinion, we don't think we've done last. The disclaimer opinion is probably worse, that the PMCE has what room for improvement, but where the context is an adverse opinion is that 92% property, plant and equipment in terms of value, investment property is 4% and receivables 3%. You see the context of property, plant and equipment being the major part of the financial position of the PMTE. And in view of our inability to pass muster with respect to the issue of measurement in that area, the AG then issued an adverse opinion. Chairperson and members of the committee, on slide number 29, then going through the various assertions, and I think there's a lot of detail here with respect to the completeness, right and ownership and existence assertion, and a number of comments there on the AG's opinion. I won't go through that detail. And then moving on to the next slide, valuation. That is where we had a problem. But in this particular context, you see the greens there, and with respect to the other assertions, we were able to at least perform decently with respect to the other assertions of completeness, ownership and rights and existence, as well as presentation and disclosure, which is in amber, it with respect to valuation that the department has a huge room to improve. Then moving PMC audit action plans and progress. Chair, talking directly to the issue of the property, plant and equipment. There was a number of errors yet that identified on these slides, the next 5 slides, property, plant and equipment, the deem cost issues, the multiple methods of deem cost applied to one facility and property. And there's action plans put in place to address this, as well as incorrect extents used in the calculation of deem cost. And the action plans put in place there, together with a mismatch between the immovable asset property description and the so-called Lightstone report, which is a database of municipal valuation, and action plans put in place to address that. Then we also have the incorrect classification of buildings of high and low rise, and that is being dealt with, where the calculations, the formulas are being updated to reflect that all buildings of 3 and 4 floors are deemed as low rise. And then capital projects linked to incorrect properties on the register, that is also being dealt with, where our key account management is playing a huge role, and then also procurement instructions will in future be required to include certain details to facilitate a proper classification in this particular regard. And then another problem we have is assets under construction with respect to assets that are being constructed and the extent to which they are included in the asset register. We have challenges with respect to incorrect classification of projects between capital expenditure and operational expenditure. And with respect to our systems and dealing with legacy issues, we put a number of action plans in place to ensure we are able to improve our level of classification between operation and capital expenditure. And then also as under construction, the assets replaced and demolished through the works control system was not de-recognized, and we put now controls in place in order to deal with this particular matter. Also with asset under construction, capital projects linked to incorrect properties on the register, and we've developed a position paper here, and this is being implemented to ensure that we are able to attend to these matters and deal with this exposure going forward. Immovable assets as well, completed projects are not recognized in the correct period due to completion dates not captured on the WCS or the work control system, and then also depreciation policies incorrectly applied, and a number of controls that have been put in place to address these. Accruals, assets and planned maintenance, in the revenue accrual, information could not be provided with respect to accruals relating to planned maintenance and assets, consequently scheduled maintenance, assets and receivables. Receivables, in particular, accrued income for recoverable projects is incorrect. Now, the audit action plan includes a full review of WCS approval, updating of payables, regional training, and most importantly, our Sage Archibus project, which is taking in the new ERP system so that we can do away with all these manual processes, which are the root cause, ultimate root cause for many of our challenges. And then with respect to the maintenance provision, the audit exposure is that we have inadequate evidence to support provisions made in the financial statements with respect to day-to-day maintenance, and the current systems do not support the identification of accrual. Now, our action plan is the implementation of the Archibus model, the IT model, with full tracking of transactions and the development of reliable and reliable models to predict the amount due based on false logs. The maintenance is an ongoing thing, and we need a more automated approach of identifying our expense exposure, or cost exposure with respect to day-to-day maintenance that are on the go is required to be approved. And the Sage Archibus maintenance module is on the go in this regard. Chairperson, I'm moving on to section 3, which is a program specific action plan, but I've already covered some of it, because some areas have an effect on the financial statements as well as on non-financial information. So I'll only cover those that I haven't covered in the earlier slides. With respect to SCM, there's also a finding that contracts were extended or modified without proper approval. And these are contract management issues. There's also a finding that measures for combating abuse were not implemented and awards were made to corrupt service providers. And we identified the root cause, of course, as a lack of capacity to validate the information submitted by others. And that payments which constitute irregular expenditure were not included in the irregular expenditure amount. Here we have processes being bypassed. And also awards were made to persons in the service of the state. And we identified a root cause that we don't have a consolidated database to verify employment. Now, with respect to action plans, the chairperson and members of the committee, consequence management is a big thing here with respect to non-compliance, and identified areas will be referred to investigation for further investigation, and controls will be put in place, and this will be monitored on an ongoing basis. With respect to the STM system, the department has in fact implemented all the National Treasury administrative requirements, but this notwithstanding, any identified cases of non-compliance will be referred for further action, and then controls have been put in place to avoid these going forward. With respect to the irregular expenditure, the identified cases will be referred to for investigation, and my colleague, the CFO, will also add to that particular matter. And then awards to person who are in the employer of the state that, as I mentioned, we don't have a consolidated database to test for this on an ongoing basis. But we do have an investigation on the go where every BPW employee, their names have been cross-checked against awards made by the department for the last 5 years to determine whether any employee of the department has in fact conducted business with the department or any other organ of state. And those results are due before the end of this year, Chairperson. And the interim results we see, it's actually a good story to tell that we don't have, but it's not a significant risk we face as a department. And as you know, where you have misdemeanors in this area, people don't play with their own names, but they do so through third and fourth parties. However, we will share the results of that investigation with the committee. With respect to strategies to improve performance, with the SCM area, we have conducted reviews of all our supply chain business processes. The supply chain delegations have been reviewed. There's regular training taking place of all SCM participants, bird adjudication and bird specification committee members and prospective members. And we've also implemented compliance gates within the entire SCM business process area. Moving on to extended public works program, Chairperson, I have in fact covered this. I think the message from the EPWP is that a more intensive work is taking place to verify and pre-validate the kind of information that is being loaded in the EPWP reporting system. Greater support is being provided to public bodies in this regard. So I will move past the EPWP slides that we covered then. And I will move then to the property plant, property and construction industry policy and research. And just make one or two comments regarding the IDT. Concerns were raised about the IDT and what has transpired is that the department has directed the IDT management to develop and submit a turnaround strategy to the department to focus on issues of financial governance and management, business development, stakeholder management, as well as ensure they are able to conduct their mandate effectively. And our policy branch will lead this particular area and interrogate the input. And we also have a shareholder contract which will be developed with the IDT that will be effective for the year ahead, 2018-19. And in fact, we have a shareholder compact in place today. The IDT has a Schedule 2 entity as a shareholder compact to complement the turnaround strategy. So there will be an increased oversight over the activities of the IDT and what the IDT is supposed to serve as an organization going forward and how it interacts with the department. Moving on to prestige, Chairperson, there were a number of findings with respect to prestige with the efficiency indicators. That the number of working days to resolve mechanical breakdowns as well as resolve emergency breakdowns, the reported performance information was problematic, and the Auditor General found that the reported achievement was not supported by adequate evidence with respect to both indicators. Now what we identified in the calls logging process is not integrated in the IT system. And with respect to both efficiency indicators, our ICT is designing a unique call logging system for Prestige and dedicated system for Prestige to ensure that we have a proper information system to report performance that is accurate and valid going forward. So this is also dependent on our IT system. Chair, moving on to construction project management, program 3 in PMCE. Their indicators, number of approved infrastructure project designs, number of approved projects already for tender, sites handed over for construction, the percentage of projects completed within time, and the number of EPWP work opportunities created through a construction project. At the same audit finding, it is incomplete reporting and insufficient audit evidence to support or substantiate the reported performance information. And they identified as our key deficiencies, there is a lack of review and monitoring, improper report keeping, inadequate, incomplete financial and performance reports, and unreliable evidence that supports the reported performance information. And what we've done is that, as an action plan, management is implementing a number of interventions to ensure that actual achievements reported in the report and ultimately the annual report is supported by adequate portfolio evidence, and this includes amending the project manager's work plan to include accurate updating of the WCM system, our contract management system, and to include the position of a project accountant in the structure of the project branch to help them with updating the system and the issues that pertain to numbers and accounting. Streamlining of reporting between regional and head office, because we found that the breakdown in communication there also led to inaccurate reporting, and then also comparison of data, WCS data, our contract system data to portfolio of evidence, and engaging our ICT with regard to WCS development. WCS is basically a contract management system, mainframe-based system from the 1970s. So we need to upgrade that to ensure that we migrate to our new Sage Archibald system, which is intended to ensure that the expected outcome of accurate and verified data is possible for audit purposes. Of course, together with strict monitoring and supervision of information that comes in the region. With respect to our project branch, we have monthly project review meetings taking place. And look at commitments, CPEP, WCS updating, and strict monitoring of APB targets. And these are also standing agenda items of the project branch meetings and subcommittee meetings. We're also enforcing the review delegations that allocate authority to senior executives at head office rather than the junior officials in the region. And we're also reviewing standard operating procedures following from the initiative we are embarking upon to develop new business processes in the PMTE. And they're also monitoring and outputs from key committees such as the SCAPS Plan Committee, Variation Order Committee, and Supply Chain Management Committees on a weekly basis. Also reviewing the performance agreements of project managers, which is critical because these are the individuals who are ultimately responsible for monitoring this area, to update their performance agreements to include these important interventions such as updating the system with respect to meeting ATP targets, and project filing and maintaining basic documents for audit purposes. And we're also establishing a panel of legal and technical experts to adjudicate contractor disputes, which arise from time to time, so they don't hold our projects and force us to deliver projects outside the required time. Moving on to real estate management services, which is our leasing function. It includes our leasing function, the chairperson and members of the committee. The indicators there relate to the list of immovable assets set up for revenue generation. So this was intended to increase our revenue stream and through letting out of property, and also processing of leasing requests within the small harbor space, together with other areas with respect to leasing. But these are the two key problems we had here, where the AG in particular found that the reported achievement was misstated. We identified that there was late submission of requisite information from regional offices. And the action plan is that there must be a monthly submission of reported performance supported by adequate evidence, and this will be monitored on an ongoing basis. Our real estate management services was not a key problem with respect to audit findings. With respect to improving performance, there's monthly submission of performance information by regional offices. We are also issuing guidelines with submission dates and letters that go on out to the heads of property management in the regions where non-compliance has been identified. This primarily will be an initiative going forward. With respect to our asset register, I have already covered this because it has a fundamental impact on our financial statement, So we talked about it in that area. But as you can see, there are a number of interventions to ensure that we deal with the AG findings in the area of the immovable asset register. Moving on to the final program, the PMCE, the facilities management program. The first indicator where we had problem was the percentage of unscheduled maintenance incidents resolved within specific prescribed time frames. The AG reported the scope limitation, and we identified that the measures depend on the accuracy of information, similar to the efficiency indicators of the prestige with respect to resolving maintenance incidents. And this depends on the quality of the call center system. And the adverse finding was caused by the failure to launch our call center module, the Sage Archibus. And what has transpired is that given the fact that we are developing the Sage Archibus, the old system, which is called Work For You, was neglected, in a sense. And this led to a number of challenges in reporting accurate information. And the full rollout of the call center module of Archibus will remedy this problem and mitigate the finding going forward. And our FM branch is focusing heavily on ensuring credibility of information in this area. With respect to the green economy and the reduction in energy consumption, there was also a limitation of scope reported there, and we identified as a department that we have three problematic regions, Pretoria, Mabatu, and Cape Town, in relation to energy savings. And what has transpired is that some savings were not accompanied by a portfolio of evidence and was not submitted in time, and therefore failed to substantiate the reported information in this area. And the further information is that these savings in these regions are also based on an old contract. Old contracts were the old savings contracts which were implemented independently from head office. So that also led to a disjuncture between head office and what we were reporting and what was transpiring in the region. Now what we've done is we've established a function within FM and head office to provide capacity planning, process management, and also monitoring and verification services throughout the FM program to avoid the recurrence of this particular finding. Chair, moving on to reduction of kiloliters, that is water. The finding was a reported information for the target was mistaken, and the evidence provided indicated 3.3 million. And not 4.4 million as we reported. So we could not provide sufficient evidence to support the reported performance information. And the root cause was identified in that this is respect to the shared water savings contract in the Pretoria region only, and not the rest of the national contract. And Pretoria initiated a contract in 2007, which ran until November 2016. And we find that now that the Pretoria contract is terminated, the national contract now covers the rest of the 10 regions which don't have a problem, and the Pretoria contract has been terminated, and we think the problem will eliminate itself. Moving forward, Chairperson, onto unscheduled maintenance involved within prescribed time frame, that we see the migration to Sage Archibus as being our silver bullet here, as the department is working heavily towards implementing the FM module, and we expect to see more reliable and stable data emerge with respect to unscheduled maintenance. Regarding the reduction in energy, FM has developed stricter processes to ensure only savings that are substantiated by POE is reported, and we see going forward the removal of all the issues in this area. With respect to kiloliters, as I mentioned, the tutorial complex has left, and we hope that the problem will also less with it. With respect to facilities management, Chairperson and members of the committee, the broader strategy has been the so-called top 300 buildings, where the top 300 buildings that have been identified for condition assessment are being undertaken within the scope of available resources. Specific components are being identified, and there's a pilot program under the top 300 buildings program, where we're setting the strategy and setting the tone of how we want to maintain our buildings going forward. There's also an initiative to develop technical skills internally, and there's also a view going forward to resuscitate our workshops that have become have gone out of service in the recent past. We're also working towards an automated call center for FM, because it's an area that's buzzing continuously, and if we don't manage it, it will run out of control. And we're also working with the telemetry systems. We have work being undertaken with the service provider where we can have remote monitoring of the functioning of our lifts and geysers and other systems so that we can manage them better. So under the banner of the top 300 buildings, new business processes also being developed under the program facilities management. And it's a long-term strategy in place here. And I think one of the conversations that we'll have today with the committee is the funding gap that we have, where there's a huge disjuncture between the kind of tariffs we charge our client departments, and the kind of funding that is necessary to keep buildings in a decent condition. And I think that will be discussed later in the day, Chairperson and members of the committee. Moving on to risk management, we're talking about the risk management. This was raised by a few members of the committee, and we were requested also handing some documentation. What we've done is we've handed in our strategic risk register. What I want to say is that beyond the strategic register, we also have operational registers in all our regions. They manage those registers. The branches also have their own operational registers. At a corporate level, we maintain a strategic risk register. And that's my colleague here, the CFO next to me, likes to say. He wants to, one of the persons who forced us to define our strategic risks in more definite terms. And what are the 10 issues that keep you awake at night, that keep you from sleeping? And this is what our reporter last year came up with. These are the 10 strategic risks that are of significant nature to DPW, that will close our doors if we don't mitigate, and that are of that the threat is of an existential nature. It's at that level. And they appear on the registers of the department as well as the PMC. In fact, those in grey or white on the street, they relate to both the department and the PMT. Those in orange or amber are DPW specific risks, talking to the mandate of transformation and policy setting within the construction and property sectors. And the one in the south or turquoise on the street is basically the PMT related risks. And that change, you can see that the weakening financial viability and sustainability of our entities, especially the PMT, is our number one strategic risk, given the purse from National Treasury has been shrinking over the years, and we are also still in the process of embarking on a proper revenue generation strategy and financial model going forward. The second one being the loss of state resources to fraud and corruption, which is significant, and the department has developed a comprehensive fraud and corruption combating strategy here. Three is the breach of key legislation and prescripts. This is compliance of anything to do with non-compliance is covered in item three. With respect to item four is our failure to provide quality accommodation within time and cost. This is the core mandate of the PMTE. Five is our inability to maintain our buildings at an appropriate standard, is the deterioration in the value of the state portfolio. Five is the failure to influence the sector with regard to transformation, including skills development, BBBE, job creation in both the construction and property sectors. So this talks to transformation, our inability to transform the sectors. Seven is the failure by both DPW and TMC to achieve BBBE and skills development targets. This is our inability to develop skills and capacity in the construction and property sectors. Number eight is the non-integration of spatial planning activities at the three tiers of government. This is our planning function and how we bring together all the three tiers of government within the construction and property industries. And then moving on to nine is the lack of cooperation that enables seamless service delivery between the sector departments. Given that public works is a concurrent function, we work with the local government as well as the provinces through the Intergovernmental Relations Act, and our inability to establish a common view of service delivery with respect to infrastructure is a strategic risk. And finally, our failure to integrate business information for cross-cutting functions and involve proper planning. And Chairperson and members of the committee have seen throughout our presentation this week as well as the week before that one of our key limitations in the organization is the failure to have implemented a proper ERP system that gives us the kind of information and accurate information for audit reporting and to avoid the audit findings and adverse opinions is largely due to our failure to have proper accounting information systems in place, and it also affects our ability to plan properly with management information to make accurate and better decisions. Chairperson, the next two slides is also talking about the same thing, but I will now conclude on that very topic, Chairperson, of Sage Afibat. And what has happened is to give you an overview of Sage Afibat. Sage Afibat is replacing the legacy system, which is WCS, the work control system which we use for construction, and the PMIS which we use for property management. Those are legacy systems, they're mainframe-based systems. They were historically maintained by CETA. Now, Afibat is the management system for real estate management solutions, infrastructure management, as well as facilities management. And those are the key areas, and our immovable asset list, they have been migrated to Afibat. However, the financial reports are developed on Excel. And this will be eliminated once Afibat is fully implemented. With respect to Sage, Sage is a financial management system. The key areas include accounts payable, which has been implemented already, accounts receivable, which has also been implemented, budgeting, which has been implemented, and procurement, which is on the go. And Sage has been in use since 2013 and cost us 21 million rand. And Afibat stores the asset register, which also stores the asset register, cost 16 million. And we also had a problem with poor contractors over a period of time, which we've had to deal with. Now, Afibat interfaces with Sage, and that interface is still outstanding and will be implemented as part of the Afibat rollout, and hopefully this will allow for proper draft reporting going forward in the short to medium term. Chair, members of the committee, in concluding, I want to just mention the date for the live November 2017. Our pilot bridges are Pretoria, Johannesburg, and Nell's Place, and that will include the lease in, the call center, the immovable asset register, and the movable asset register on November 17th. And modules to go live in 2018-19 going forward is condition assessment, which is critical to the maintenance function, project management, which is critical to our construction project management function, preventative maintenance, and leasing out. Then we'll follow in 2018-19. So, Chairperson, this hopefully will allow us to do three important things, among many others. Is we have improved four logs for maintenance purposes, both for prestige, as well as our overall FM function, and proper reporting on scheduled and unscheduled maintenance. We'll also have automated grant reporting, as opposed to our manual intervention, which forced us to stretch the earth to arrive at the basic financial information for reporting purposes. And then finally, it will also improve our ability to produce itemized bills, which is a critical pivot of the entire financial model of the GPW, and will enable us to bill our clients at a rate more equivalent to market rate, and enable us then in turn to provide them with a better service. Chairperson, we have taken this to the presentation. We also have a question and answer part. But I will pause here and then back to the DG to guide us on to the next step. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair. We have got questions and answers. We are of the view that we need to respond to the questions that have been asked before. The approach that we're going to take is that since the questions, I hope that they've been circulated to honorable members, I suggest that we if they are not circulated, can they be the honorable member should be circulated. My colleagues will lead in terms of each question. My colleague, DDG Construction Projects, will explain with respect to that question. You just raise the question and also explain a bit. And then we get to, without reading the entire notes, but just giving an explanatory position, is question one, question two, question three,
I think we can deal with the questions because it is properly covered, I think, in terms of the answers that we have given here in writing. I would love members to interact with this, because this is the main thing, in actual fact. That's why we are here this morning. So if we can interact with this quickly, members, I don't know if you are with me, we can interact with the presentation that was given, because the questions, I think it is fully answered on the pages. But we will come to the questions after we dealt with this presentation that we had this morning. Can I get any hands? Honourable Bhutani, I know Honourable Bhutani, okay, I will come.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm going to leave to after speaking. I will not be asking any questions as such, but just to make some remarks and in the process of responding, could address some of the issues that I am going to raise. Page 5, slide 10. My issue there is whether there is sufficient consequence management, you know, on the issue addressed there on slide 10. Then on slide 17, page 9, I think we'll recall that those members of Public Works were with us when we were in Mtata and Barichola KSB a couple of weeks back, that one of the primary problems is that when beneficiaries, potential beneficiaries are recruited, it's done on a party political basis. And I would want to stress to the department the importance of trying to address this once and for all. We know the temptation, but when we moved down to Mbashe municipality, we found that they were dealing with the problem in a more constructive manner. You know, the rest will follow from there. And then on slide 20, the issue addressed there, on the verification of the members with their ID numbers. My issue there is whether you have, with the samples that were taken, or with the number of people that you were able to go through, whether you did in fact find any people who are not supposed to be beneficiaries of the program, like foreigners and so on, foreign nationals and so on, who have not yet been naturalized. And slide 38, I got just one sentence to make there, and this is evident countrywide, and is also confirmed by your statements further down, that this issue of the maintenance of the buildings, I'm glad that you have admitted somewhere that there isn't a comprehensive, concrete, you know, maintenance plan. And you do find that the buildings, you know, are literally falling apart, paint peeling off and so on, tires coming off. I want to say pretty much countrywide with the number of provinces that one has been to. And I would like to appeal to the ministry, you know, to say there should be a definite program to strengthen the maintenance of government building. People are crying countrywide about the poor or lack of maintenance of the buildings. And sometimes when it happens in tertiary institution, you know, students make it worse by destroying that poorly maintained, you know, infrastructure just to prevent their end. In conclusion, sir, lack of transformation, which has been admitted as a big cause, a big problem in the construction sector, you know, is gaining momentum. That is the consequence thereof. To the extent that what's been happening in KZN is now finding itself even in the Eastern Cape. This report in a regional newspaper called the Daily Dispatch, you know, last week confirms that projects worth 1.5 billion rand are being obstructed by black contractors in the Eastern Cape, now school building program, who feel that the conditions imposed by the department in the contracts are such that they cannot be accommodated when they tender for these programs to build. That's the fundamental problem. The conditions are such that black contractors who are not up there feel that the system is structured in such a manner that it virtually eliminates them. They cannot commit. And this is partly, probably, one of the reasons why the entire High Court, when we were there, they said that that 101 million rand contract, they advertised it twice, but there were no black contractors who qualified, for the job. Now that's money going to a contractor in Pretoria, right under our watch. It's the same thing with the T34 route, where between N2 and Route 61, linking there, Gladbury, it was a white company there. It's the same thing in Fort Beaufort, 54 million, no black contractor. You wonder if this is just the tip of the iceberg. So that is one thing that we would like to appeal to the ministry to definitely pay attention to. And like I said, it's not questions, sir. It's just remarks which I hope will be, will be given providing due attention in course of time. Unfortunately, I have to leave. There's a little debate amongst political parties with students of political science coming from UCT to the University of Stellenbosch, across in my daily place. I may be back, if we finish that in time. My slot is at 4:15. Thanks very much, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Putani. I think Malena is charming you there with that debate. Honourable members, Honourable Leider, let me just also welcome, after a long layoff, I think she's doing to get a PhD or something, but Honourable Adams, welcome back to the committee. Yeah, really missed you, really missed you. I see that EJ was supposed to give you a round of applause there. Welcome also Honorable Ryder, Honorable Fick, that was sick, but glad to see that you're back on your feet again, preparing to go, and also Honorable Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Jay. Just on a lighter note, I heard from one of my friends over the weekend. He also said he still misses his ex-girlfriend, but his aim is improving. Jude, thank you, and I'd like to acknowledge the department for presenting us with the action plan, the audit action plan. I'm going to make a couple of comments if I may, and I think one of the first one that I want to point out also deals with one of some of the answers to the questions where the operations of the Auditor General, the department seems to not be in agreement with the Auditor General's findings and their some of the comments that were made, and the department feels that some of those comments were a little unfair. And this has come through in a couple of answers and a couple of the slides that have come through. That's as may be. I think the reality is that next year, it's the same Auditor General that's going to be doing the audit, and I'm sure their opinions will not have changed unless there's comprehensive engagement on a constructive basis with the AG's office, or with Treasury at the very least, so that some agreement can be achieved, or some level of agreement can be achieved, to ensure that both the department and Treasury and the AG all understand what the requirements are, exactly what is required, so that we can meet those requirements and move forward. I think my first comment relates to slide 26, where it seems that the falling away of Directive 2 is blaming for the adverse audit opinion. I just wanted to point out there as well. There was warning. It didn't come as a surprise that it fell away. And I'm wondering if there was really a plan for that. And just going on and touch on a point I'm going to make a bit later, is that, you know, was this identified timelessly as a risk? You know, there's a risk register, and I think that's why I asked for a copy of the risk register at our last meeting, and I appreciate, I see we did receive a copy today, although I note that the risk register that's been submitted, the copy is only for the Johannesburg region, according to the heading on page one. We'll get to the risk register shortly. But, you know, issues like this, the falling away of the directive, you know, that's something that needs to be planned for. The fact that IT systems are being integrated, and there might be a delay in implementation, we might not meet deadlines. These are the things that should be on risk registers, and we should be working around. And the fact is, I don't see them on the risk register that's been submitted. I wanted to make as well a general comment just on supply chain management. The fact is that it's a commonly held belief out there in the public sphere that public works overpays tremendously for the projects that are undertaken. We saw it ourselves when we went on oversight. We saw a school being upgraded for something upwards of 68 million, I think was the figure that was thrown about at the time. I don't quite know that, I can't remember exactly. When in fact the real work that was happening was probably about a 20 million rand worth of work that was happening on site in terms of what the contractor said to us. So supply chain management is highlighted as a concern. And make no mistake, I understand, and the Deputy President made the comment the other day in his last question session that, you know, there are transformation and developmental aspects in terms of supply chain management which need to be achieved. And I buy into that 100%. The fact is that you need to balance a number of issues together. One is the fact that you've got transformation and development or aspects that need attention. The other is that you've actually got the needs of government departments that need to be addressed. So we can't sacrifice projects because we are trying to make sure that we're ticking the transformation and developmental boxes. We also can't end up strengthening cartels. And what the Honourable Fulton was saying just now is quite important. You know, it's quite easy to spec a project so high that people don't qualify, or to tailor specs on a project to suit specific contractors. And I think this is often what we see, and that enables people, contractors, to push up costs. If they know that there's only three people in the country that can meet the requirements, you know, we all know the Competition Commission is a very, very busy body. Okay, they are busy bodies, but they are also very, very busy because they are kept busy because people out there in business know the government's got a big checkbook and they can take advantage of it. So I think supply chain management is incredibly important, and some of the issues that are being addressed here are good and sound. I think that we are giving lip service to the review of supply chain management, and the bottom line is that we need to bring in that test of value for money. Is there proper value for money being brought into supply chain management? The fact is that if contractors can afford to come from Pretoria to come and work in the Eastern Cape at the high costs of moving all of their equipment and their staff and keeping their staff in residence while they're down here, they've obviously built a lot of fat into the pricing. Are we as government getting value for money? And it's the taxpayers' money that we are dealing with. The next comment I wanted to make was relating to the IT, and there were again a lot of comments made about IT, the silver bullet comment, which made me shudder, because I don't think IT is ever a silver bullet, and there's a couple of things that I wanted to highlight. First of all, there's an answer to one of the questions, which states that the Archibus system is being used for the asset register, but you know, the Auditor General didn't realise that it's just downloaded onto Excel and that was what was submitted. But we are using Archibus. But then your presentation says something different. So your answer to the question doesn't tie up with the presentation that's been given today. In addition to which, I'd like to just say as well, the CFOs are all given good opportunity to deal with findings of Auditor General. So if that was the case, the CFO would have had a lot of time to sit with the AG and say, no, listen, it is here, this was just the printout that you were given, but we do have the support here. It wasn't done. And it points to the fact that I think we found in our meetings a couple of weeks ago where the CFOs don't seem to see the importance of or the gravity of getting an adverse opinion or a disclaimer or a qualified opinion. The importance of that finding didn't seem to go through. I'm just wondering if that attitude doesn't need correcting in a big way. But getting back to IT systems, I see that we are relying quite heavily on the implementation of Archibus, and hopefully that's going to be, it can never be a silver bullet, but hopefully it is going to solve some of the issues. But I think that you need to then prioritize the implementation of this system, set strict deadlines as a department. And, you know, if they are set, we'll perhaps share it with this portfolio committee as well. Let's see what those deadlines are and let's measure ourselves against them, because I can tell you right now, if you start missing those deadlines, the next report of the Auditor General is going to look even worse. Okay? And if there's not an improvement in some of these findings, it's going to make your positions across that side of the table very uncomfortable. It's going to make us feel uncomfortable as well, because it's going to look like we haven't done our work this year. So, yes, I think IT is something that needs to be massively be addressed. And the other thing with IT is that I see that is a lot of the fact that reports were not submitted or reports were not comprehensive. And so some of the responses to that also relates to IT. And I just want to caution you that putting a system in place doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to change the Auditor General's opinion, because the fact is, if there's a paper-based system and reports are not being submitted on time, if you put a computer system in place, I can tell you now those reports will still not be submitted on time because people are hiding things. Those reports are not being submitted with good reason, and we've seen that on the ground. We've seen that people are not giving the facts because they can't give the facts because it's too embarrassing to admit that a project has taken 16 years to launch. It was identified 16 years ago and it hasn't, the construction has not started. It's too embarrassing to put on a report in writing that we are busy working on something, but the completion date was 2 years ago. We've spent double the budget that we were supposed to, and we're still only 40% of the way through putting that project. So putting systems in place is not going to solve your non-reporting or your inability to demonstrate that you've met your predetermined objectives. That evidence is still not going to be forthcoming because it's been buried. So I think just a cautionary note, don't think that simply putting the IT system in place is going to get rid of those audit findings. The next one I wanted to point out was on page 58, slide 58, which concerned me quite strongly, the fact that we are procuring the services of a facilities management contractor. You know, I pointed out a couple of weeks ago that we seem to have taken the ugly bits of public works and ring-fenced them in PMTE so that public works can look a little bit better and get out of qualified work. PMTE is the one that looks like the dog. Now I see that we're also going to be outsourcing facilities management to a contractor. I'm just wondering if this is not one of the core functions of public works that should be done in-house, and you know, is that not something that we are doing here, or should be doing here? If we are doing this, is this going to shift money from our salary base across to contracted services? Is perhaps my question. Will we be sacrificing money on the salary bill to appoint a facilities management contractor? There's the real question. Yes, the next slide is slide 60, which we spoke about incomplete reporting, insufficient appropriate audit evidence. My note here just says on-site visit tells you the real story, and putting in an IT system or a better reporting system is not going to necessarily help you. Slides 68, 69, 70, etc. I noticed we did skim over that. I do think that it's something that needs extreme attention. I know we've dealt with it, not to labour a point, but I think that the real estate information in a registry, that asset register, is a massively important piece of information, and control over that needs to be highlighted. Right. The comment then relates. The next comment comes out of slide 74, but it's not pertaining directly only to that slide. It relates to the importance of the risk register and the fact that the issues around the issues raised on slide 74 and others should all be contained somewhere in a risk register, so that we are focusing our attention on addressing these issues. The fact is, we're identifying it here in this report. And I am hoping that this report doesn't kind of get filed after today and forgotten about. I think there's a risk of that unless you have actually taken these issues and identified them and addressed them in a monthly risk management meeting of some sorts. Slide 75 and 76 relate to energy and water consumption, and I think quite important here, I think that I wanted to mention again that you know, do we have landlord-tenant agreements with all of our user departments? Because I think that saving of energy and water is something that our user departments are also extremely responsible for, as much as we are, because at the end of the day, they're the guys that are on the ground. We all remember being in the prison when the tap was running and everyone was kind of ignoring it because, no, that's public works problem. But, it was the department's problem that should have been there. Question I have on slide 78. It says identify the top 300 buildings. I just wanted to know what your criteria will be in terms of identifying the top 300. Will those be the top 300 in terms of rand value? Will those be the top 300 in terms of which minister lives in that particular house? Will those be the top 300 in terms of which need buildings which need the most maintenance or improvement, etc.? So the criteria of that is going to be quite important in terms of determining if that's actually going to improve performance or not. Yes, more points on IT. I'm not going to labour that point. Chair, I think I've said my say. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Once again, apologies for coming late. But I think maybe we must move Parliament for the Elizabeth because the traffic in Cape Town is a madhouse. The last time I had a concern that I raised, and I'm pleased to see that Mr. Govind is here today, so it's obviously that my information I received was false or fake news, so I'm pleased to see Mr. Govind here. Obviously, I wasn't here for the presentation, so I've just got I've read some of the slides. So just broad comments. I think from the outset, maybe this document, which is called an audit action plan, and I understand the purpose why it has been prepared because of the adverse opinion that was received, but perhaps it should be a management action plan, because clearly management has objectives, and that's the objectives that they should set, which is obviously should be similar, or the auditor set similar objectives. So I think that's the purpose of it, to run an effective department, and that should be. So in other words, what I'm implying is that you don't run a department or do work because you want to please the auditor. You do work because you want to make sure that the department is run efficiently, effectively, and depending on whatever criteria that is. So, the issues that have been identified here, mostly, it's an 87-slide document, mostly as a result of weak controls. And the outcome of that therefore the consequence of that is that that results then in an increased, in the public sector, in the public sector, sorry, an increased audit fee. Because what happens is that auditors will then test the controls, and thereafter they will then determine to what extent substantive tests must be performed. So that's the downside of having controls or weak controls or weaknesses in the system. And we can understand why. So that's the one side of it. So we incurring additional costs in the audit because of the fact that there are weak controls or weaknesses in the system. I'm pleased that when the presenter went to the last slide there or somewhere, he spoke about this, the risks, and he classified that as failures, and that's exactly what is happening in this department, is that those are risks that have been identified, but the department is failing because of the weak controls. And there are a number of reasons, so we don't have to look too sad about it. It might be problems, surely. The fact that we've got this document, it indicates that there is the problems are really solved, there's a desire. So, the way I see it is simply, you've got work that is not being done for a number of reasons. Either you are employing in the department incompetent employees, either, or you're employing employees who are qualified but might not necessarily be receiving the training. And I'm hoping it's the latter. And I'm sure it is the latter, because I don't believe, because I've seen advertisements in the newspapers, and I know that there are a number of qualified employees in the department. So perhaps the fact that you have a financial qualification, an auditing qualification, doesn't necessarily mean that you will be able to apply the systems in the, that are used in the department. And maybe that's what I'm seeing. Maybe that's what I'm seeing. So you employ people that obviously are not, and you, which is resulting in weaknesses in the department. You know, if you look at I think there are Archibus and Sage systems that are being used, but then still financial reporting is done on Excel. I forgot about Excel many years ago. So using Excel still has to be a major problem. It has to be changed sooner rather than later. And I see there's a desire, there's an intention of the department to change it. So that should obviously be your first step, because you can't. I mean, Excel uses formulae. And if one mistake is made with one formula, then it kicks out a whole lot of files and information. So I see a problem there. And again, HR leave in the document. I see HR leave, the leave has been applied for on manual documentation. That cannot be. It cannot be. It has to be. I mean, it's so simple to apply for leave online. That's the way it's done. I mean, in the 19th century, you were applying for leave manually. So again, it's a weakness, because you're using documentation, which, according to the information given, is captured, or in this instance, is not captured. So you're resulting in, and it's as I said, it's information and it's a system that can be improved and can be corrected if you just apply the correct system. And the other one where the problems are is your EPWP, and again you have on slide number 18, it indicated that the internal audit function or they're not involved in the reconciliation. Now, if they're not involved in the reconciliation, what are they doing? That's surely internal audit, their responsibility is to assist management. Their responsibility is not to assist the auditor. The auditor, the external auditor, will rely on the work of the internal auditor. But in terms of the work, internal auditors, their responsibility is to assist management insofar as controls, and insofar as ensuring that they have proper systems. So, as I said, the department can be commended for this document here. It shows that they've identified it, and hopefully next year or in the future we see them, that all these are attended to here. So that's the statement. And it just the last question that I have, and I wasn't here for this, I see there's a word there that's porthole. Is that meant to be portal? I don't know, I just saw that in the Yeah, it was portal, I know, when you're in a boat, that's a portal. So I'll just pick that word up. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matebe.
Thank you, Chair. sort of comment, but when I'm going through to these documents, they also indicated in this question then we asked. So can we study this question from just a proposal, the remaining one? Some of the comments have been answered in this question and answered.
Any other member? Okay. No, thank you, honourable members and departments, Deputy Minister, Ex-Majiji. As the member that said, there is a desire and intention to pull the department in the right direction. I just got one concern on Archibus. The IT world changes by the second. You do have hackers, or breakers as they call themselves, that also get clever by the second. Now Archibus is a national, it's a universal platform as such. Now with all the money that's been spent on all these things, wouldn't it be wise for a department who has invested those money to get someone to build themselves a safe and secure system? Someone that looked like your Archibus, your Sage, and those systems. I think it would have been very, very wise to get, because if I look at the report and if I look at what has been spent in terms of the annual report on page 267, the amount of money that has been spent there. And it ponders the question then, is it worth it for PMTE to spend that amount of money? Because now you must still spend money on training, to train people on this Archibus system and take it right through down to your regional offices. But it says that you have an Archibus system just at head office installed and not at your regional offices, because you'll still get your regional offices sending you manually things through. So, and you then have the potential danger also of someone hacking into the Archibus system, because it's a universal system, it's a global system. It's not a secure site as per se that you can claim this is DPW's secure site or PMTE's secure site. It just makes, I'm just wondering, it's a good system, Archibus and Sage. You can do a lot with it. And it's got all what you require and what you want to do with it. It's got everything covered there. Your budgeting process, your strategic planning, all that as such that needs to work in managing facilities as such. But just for a broader picture, because also the same on the annual report on page 164, the 32 million, I'm rounding it off, 31.585 million that's been spent by the department on a system. Now, add that to the other millions that's been spent on the Archibus system, for argument's sake. Your computer software, your reconciliation of intangible software, 2016, 2017, 20 billion has been spent on 2017. 2016, 11 million, 11.6, your additional disclosure, 3.3 million, and then again your contractual commitments was 11.87 million. Now all that money, it would have been wise to have built a system yourself, because what happened now if someone hacks into the system? Because it's not the same secure site. Someone hacks into the system, so your plan is totally out of order. Or looking for some properties, hacking into the system, or anything like that. So they can do it with the banks, they can do it with state securities and all that. What exempts public works that they can't do it from there, for them? So I'm just wondering, wouldn't it have been better? Well, because there's quite a lot of people that can build systems, very intelligent people. That can build. You could have even asked one of your client departments, correctional services, for their visitors or clients that they've got in there to build the system. They would have built you a state startup secure system. That only he or she that when he believes can hack into that
system. You know that.
So, but that is one of the worries that we've got. About that I've got personally about your Archibus and safe system. It has been proven that it is not a safe, solid and secure system of portal ICTs. Acting DG?
Maybe if I could address some of the more political and strategic issues, and then the colleagues will deal with, including the Archibus issue of whether we should get Pulse more in that. And particularly, it's a number of important issues that I thought that the Honourable Ryder had raised. First of all, we welcome the Auditor General, and we have and recognize the importance of having an external audit. It's natural that there will be sometimes a sense that we've been treated a little unfairly, or a mountain has been made of something that is rather smaller than a mountain itself. Those are the natural interactions, and some of the colleagues might want to talk in detail about that. But I just wanted to make two points in regard to our relationship with the Auditor General. The first would be that, well, if you look at page 2 of the business day today, there's a story about public works. And what it's trying to do is give the impression that public works is falling backwards, and it's even blaming the new minister for falling backwards, or hinting at that it might be the new minister. So the first point, which is what I made, I think, when we last interacted, was actually this audit is about the previous minister and the current deputy minister's leader and not the current minister. So I think it's just be a bit careful. That's not to say we shouldn't be vigilant about the new minister and his current deputy minister, but just to make that point. But also, it's not as though, and quite rightly, the Auditor General changes standards in an ongoing way. So as we are turning around and hopefully improving, the Auditor General quite correctly says, well, we want to see continued improvement, and we're going to set higher standards continuously. So I think that is something that sometimes gets a bit lost. So if you look at slide 29, which relates to I don't know if it's Auditor General ourselves, we've given ourselves a green mark, or high marks for the deep download, the immovable asset register fields checked against the national treasury minimum, compliance with the immovable asset guide, ownership is confirmed, physical verification of property. Now that's a huge amount of work that 3-4 years ago was simply, we didn't know half of what we had. We didn't have an immovable asset register that we can proud of and so on. Okay. So thanks to the pressure, our own internal pressure on ourselves, but also the Auditor General, I think that we've made significant progress. But of course now directive 2, as colleagues have said, fell away, and yes, we were well aware that it was falling away and that we needed to make plans. And when it comes to the valuation of the property, and here we feel a little bit hard done by the Auditor General, but we take the point that they've made, we need to improve significantly on getting the valuation right. But a year ago, 2 years ago, we didn't even have a clue when it came to that. We were just valuing properties at a nominal R1. That's if you fix it. Okay. So the point I'm trying to make here is that it's right that the Auditor General sits on our case and that it expects stuff. But we must be careful of imagining the course that, you know, that we haven't continued the upward slope in terms of
on the PMTE, we're falling backwards. We need to guard against falling backwards, but we also need to understand that we're also increasing over standards, and quite frankly. So I just wanted to make that clear. The second area where we've had an ongoing issue, and absolutely right, I think it was the Honourable Ryder that said that, it might have been the Honourable Tech that said it, that what is very important is where there are disagreements or issues with the Auditor General, it's important to have constructive and collegial interaction, and not just lamentations or, you know, and so on. And the one area where there's an ongoing challenge between ourselves and the Auditor General is around the Expanded Public Works Programme figures, basically, the data. And so we had ongoing discussions. I believe that we've made some progress, but we're also engaging with the Accountant General, who's an important player in the space of how one, and obviously the Treasury as well. And the nub of the issue is that in some respects we hoisted up, as the English say, hoisted ourselves on our own petard. We at one point we were saying the Department of Public Works is going to be delivering 6 million work opportunities in this administration. Now, we are not the implementing agent of the majority of those work opportunities that we've targeted over this thing. There's every municipality is participating, all provinces through different departments within provinces, numbers of national departments and so on. But we are the ones that have the responsibility of reporting to cabinet, amongst others, that this is the number of work opportunities that have been reported to us from a whole range of entities. Okay. Now, our argument is that we are not, our DG is not the accounting officer for all aspirant 6 million work opportunities. The accounting officer needs to be, you know, this municipal manager or this department head and so on. So obviously we must be the accounting officer for those that we are directly involved in. There is then the further wobble of the incentive grant. We are the kind of post office which a very significant sum, in fact, the majority of the Department of Public Works budget is we are the kind of digestive tube through which the allocation is made, and then we dispense it. And we're very good at dispensing it, because we get good marks on 100% dispensing. But we don't have a good control over what is done with the incentive grant by provinces and municipalities. Every municipality, by the way, is getting some of the incentive grant for the EPWD. So that's a challenge. How do we get that? So that is where we're engaging. But we're not just saying it's not us, but we're not the accounting officer. As you can see in the report, the EPWP branch is going to hundreds and hundreds of engaging with other public bodies involved in it to say, how do we improve the reporting standards? Can we assist you with doing so? We're doing spot checks and so on. So while our discussion, and I hope it's collegial, I hope it's friendly engagement around how we account for this and how best we audit the performance, because we do need to know that we're not just dispensing money as governments across the government and claiming work opportunities when in fact you know, attendance records aren't being kept and so on. But you can't expect DPW in Pretoria for us to be sitting with or without occupants, with or without spreadsheets and so on. Whether we're not going to be able to account for all of the attendance records or even monitor them in our view. So I just wanted to make that point. But we're not at war with the AG at all. We want to make that very clear. And we take very, very seriously the concerns that they're raising. Help us, because by and large, we, yeah, okay. The next point I wanted to make would be the point that the Honourable Sultani made, and that you picked up with as well, Honourable Ryder, which is the Honourable Sultani said, in Umfata, for some reason, he always raises this issue on Umfata, okay? I can't imagine why. Some big contracts, the way in which the contracts were developed meant that the local contractors were just cut out of the picture. Now, okay, so, and that's unfortunately, of course, you want as much as possible local contractors, and if you don't cut them in, they often then block the project and so on, or mobilize communities to block it. So you want local contractors, and you want to develop, and you don't want, as you correctly said, you don't want cartels operating from Pretoria, Joburg, or wherever, or Sandton, typically. so that you do want to make sure. But
herein lies a challenge, which I think you correctly pointed out, that on the one hand there are the developmental and transformational imperatives, and on the other hand then there are the public, the broader public interest and public service. And it's not easy to get that right. So for instance, on Friday we visited, as part of the Interministerial Committee, visited a EPWP site, which was a very nice project there in Tabanchu, in which that we're doing it with 50 odd EPWP participants in a very labor-intensive way. But we were a bit puzzled by the fact that although it was labor-intensive and not employing outside contractors, there were no contractors, it was still consultants, but it was the Free State Public Works Department, some engineers and so forth, and then these EPWP local people. But some of the costs seemed to be quite high, and we couldn't know exactly why. And we think it has to do with a good idea, which is we're cutting out the middlemen in terms of the contractors. We're not getting someone from Joburg to do it as a contractor. We're using in-house public works, provincial public works people. But let us procure the resources required for the road building from local SMEs. And we think that's a good developmental and transformational agenda, but we suspect they didn't have the capacity to produce it, and we're probably purchasing it from some cartel in Joburg and so on. So you can see one's just got to understand we've got to transform the profile of who's involved in this. We've got to promote SMEs and so on. We've got to promote the Honourable Sultani's target-based contractors. But if they can't do the job, we end up with a bigger extent. So we're always balancing that, and part of the way in which one tries to do this is to ensure that if you've got a major contractor, that they compel in the contract that we write, they're compelled. It might be a Joburg-based, unfortunately, contractor in the process, but then we compel them then to bring on board, to train, and so on, local contractors and so on. So we've got to get it right, but we don't always get it right. I just want to make it's easy to blame us for one thing, because you're trying to do transformation, but then you're messing up. So just so that we have the strategic understanding. The last point I want to make, or the second last point, is have we dumped all the tough stuff onto the PMT so that we can look good as DPW? And it's quite the contrary, actually. In fact, yes, the tough stuff is exactly the property management trading entities mandate. It's the big issue. And what we're realizing is that you needed a, and that was a cabinet decision going back many years, which was never implemented. What you need is a trading, professionalizing property management trading entity that can look after it. So that if you manage it as a public entity, but with in the public interest, but with professional skills focused around property management. Okay, we were trying to do property management from within DPW, and it was all over the place. So we knew that we know that that PMTE's got the tough task, and we think, again, referring to that slide 29, we think it's made the fact that we've begun to move in the direction of PMTE has begun to enable us to professionalize our immovable asset register, to finally have a sense of what we're the custodians of and what we are not, and so on. So I think that it's starting to kick in place, into place, but of course there's progress to made, and as all this general and yourselves are reminding us, there's a way to go. But just to assure you, it wasn't a dumping, and we're still answerable. So that's why we're sitting here explaining, doing our best to explain what PMT is doing, and we're failing and so forth, because it's not like we are evading responsibility. So just to reassure you. Very last thing, the top 300 buildings, I think someone else will talk about it in more detail, but they're not part of the prestige portfolio. Okay? So it's not about which ministers get to be, whose house, the official houses get to be in the top 300. All deputy ministers, none of us are amongst the top 300. These would be departmental buildings, essentially. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to, as you can see, I've answered at a very high level and not at a detail level,
But I think it's important to sometimes get the broader strategic things and where we have responsibility, the broader political direction as ministry where we have a But to thank the colleagues for raising robust but constructive and legitimate issues. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable members, we've got the Auditor General also in the room, and I don't think this committee wants adversaries or disclaimers against it. For wasteful expenditure, tea has been served outside from some time, so I think we can wait for tea now for about 10 minutes and be back here at 5 to 12 so that we can carry on with our proceedings. We'll wait for 10 minutes and then we'll make the department will answer and we'll take it forward. Thank you.